For some of us, personal finances aren't just personal. They include loved ones, neighbors, the communities we call home, and the causes we hold in our hearts. At Thrivent, planning your finances is bigger than just money. We help you put your plans into motion and faith into action so you can do more for the ones in your heart. Because sometimes all you need to make a difference is someone to help you make it happen. Thrivent, where money means more. Connect with us at Thrivent.com.
Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John comes in second place a lot and tries his best to look menacing on his way to Walgreens. Meanwhile, I eat way too many caramels and learn that the most highly ranked restaurants are also selling car parts. Plus a conversation about the trap of comparison and how to enjoy the one life you've been given. Today's episode is not sponsored by Hearing Tests. Stop us if you've heard this one. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Well, Johnny, it's cold outside, but you know what? The talk is hot. Let's talk about that.
I don't like that morning zoo.
Come Bye. On, guys.
We'll be right back.
There's going to be eye in the sky. Yeah.
That was
my helicopter. But my chest hitting wasn't loud enough to be heard in the microphone. Here,
I'll try. So you said a do-do-do-do-do. You gave it some help.
That's what I was trying to do, but
yeah.
Instead, I just gave myself a cardiac issue.
I always thought it was interesting. The guy in Knoxville, you didn't grow up in Knoxville, but the guy in Knoxville forever on the radio was Pete Michaels. Pete Michaels, he was the eye in the sky. And I always thought it was interesting that he would do the traffic report. Sometimes he would have to give some gruesome, you know, we've got five accidents with injury. And then he would go into details, be like, don't go this way because, you know, there's, you know, medics are on site. And then he'd have to weave in the ad that's coming. So you'd just be like,
this
it's
injury
a 42-car pileup. Mentos, the fresh maker. You didn't know when it was coming. You just knew, like, how's he going to get?
Oh, the carnage.
How's he going to get to Taco Bell from here?
Hope that guy has Geico.
Yeah.
Geico. Exactly. Yeah. I wonder if our ads come off like that. We don't usually come out of something serious into an ad.
That's true.
Rare.
We are corporate shills. I'll give you that.
Knows.
We've sold out.
Everyone knows that. If we've sold out, it's a bad deal.
Yeah, we haven't. Those checks have bounced. No, we're not selling out. We're buying in, John.
Oh,
that's what I tell myself. And that's our show.
Yeah, that's another.
We've gone to the dark side. No.
Yeah.
We are zooming into the new year. It is cold outside. The weather outside is frightful.
Mm-hmm. And the fire.
The talk is so. That's what you should have said.
That's what I should have.
Talk is so delightful.
It felt, though, as if that's a callback to Christmas. And it's time to move forward.
I don't think you've ever not had a place to go. Like, I don't think that song would ever resonate with you. Because I don't think you're, well, since we've no place to go, let's just. You're always thinking, like, should I be producing something right now? Generating something?
You know, a lot of that has.
Is it waned?
It's calmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I no longer want to just go on a vacation.
Is that like a level of. It's like a healthy level of acceptance, or is it you've become a lazy person because I've influenced you?
I was going to say, it's a healthy level of failure.
Oh, I see.
You're like, why would I spend all this time? No, I mean, No, if it's time to be with the family, I would rather be watching Netflix with my wife and not writing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
But
I'll still go on the road, like volleyball tournaments and stuff between games.
When are
we
going to go on the road?
You
and I. Should at least do a trip. You know, we didn't do a trip for my 50th. We should have done like a 50th trip. What, I got to wait for you to be 50 now?
You know what? That's a.
That's 5 years.
See,
4 years.
2 years ago, we went to Pasadena. Does that help?
No. Did we go to Pasadena together?
I went with you.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
That's right. We went for the America's Got Talent auditions.
Yeah.
That's right. You were there for me.
I'm glad I made such an impression.
I remember that trip. That was something. That was a wild. If you go back, there's a few episodes back that we tell the whole story because it's a journey.
Yeah. It was a lot of work for you.
It was a hard work trip. Yeah. It was a learning. It's a thing. Television is its own thing, and reality television is definitely its own thing. And you just go, like, man, they've got us in this weird whirlwind of, for your 3 minutes on stage, you have now a 72-hour
right
just maelstrom they put you in.
Ooh.
And I'm glad we did it. Because, I mean, you never know until you do something like that.
To this day, though, I just want to say
yeah.
how frustrating it is for me.
Right.
I don't mind saying this.
Okay.
That you got a standing ovation and a yes from all judges enthusiastically.
Right.
Enthusiastically. Standing ovation from two of the judges.
Three of the judges.
Oh, who's counting, though, really?
Yeah.
And still they didn't
right.
they didn't use you on the show. And that's a little frustrating, everybody.
Yeah,
but I was there for this. He's not making it up. I watched all this.
I know. Listen, I don't want to hash all that out. Just pass it. When you said Pasadena, it just brings back.
Well, you know, I consider myself a who's who of near misses.
Like, oh, is that right?
If I told you, I can't. I think it would be...
All the things you were being considered for that you didn't get?
All the things I came in second place on.
Oh, right.
Like, there have been some major books that I was the second place,
yeah.
and they went on to... Like, once, I will say this, like, my childhood, like, musical influence, probably one of my greatest childhood musical influences was going to write an autobiography.
Uh-huh.
And I was at Cracker Barrel, I remember, and I got the phone call. They were like, hey, he's had a writer. He doesn't like him. They're dropping him. They want you to submit it was different than what I just normally have to submit. Submit X,
yeah,
Y, and Z.
This packet or whatever.
And like within an hour, I went home and I was like, I was moving fast, getting it all together. And before the hour was up and we got it sent off, he already had somebody else.
You didn't. You need to have that packet ready.
Well, the packet was different. It's a little different for everybody.
I need you to accept responsibility. John, if you're not first, you're last. And I don't know how to say it, but...
Recently, there was an Olympian, a decorated Olympian, uh-huh. that I interviewed for. Thought the interview went pretty well. She was a female,
mm-hmm.
and they ended up picking a female writer. And then when I had to watch the Olympics and watch her just absolutely destroy, I see her in Gatorade commercials and stuff all the time. I'm like, man.
But in a way, aren't you the silver medalist of the people who were in contention? Did you get any?
I got nothing.
If there was a podium, John, if I was to construct a podium, you would be standing just a little bit below. Now, they wouldn't be playing your anthem. They'd be playing whatever anthem that person.
And who has their own anthem?
I need that. I want that.
I would say this. One of the most famous Christian authors.
Okay.
With the biggest book.
All right.
They called me. This is after I did Tim Hawkins' book.
Yeah.
And they called me the publisher.
Diary of a Jackwagon, if you want to go get that on Amazon.
Sounds like you said Diarrhea of a Jackwagon.
Well, we're going to get censored. Diary of a Jackwagon.
Yeah. I love that book.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Should have been Journal of a Jackwagon. That's more alliteration.
Yeah. They came up. I don't
Journal
think
Journal of a Jackwagon.
I didn't do that title.
Yeah.
So I don't always do titles, but.
Yeah,
but anywho,
you know, a book needs a title. I find
maybe
that's one of your problems.
I'm usually a part
You're
of
like
it.
I just submit a bunch of words, and I don't know why I'm not getting chosen. Oh well,
I think the original title that Tim and I had written was "That's the Worst" because that was the main kind of bit we were doing at the time.
Yeah,
but the publisher called and said you did such a great job on Tim Hawkins. We got this other book, and then I can't name who it was.
Yeah,
but if I named it,
right.
I was like, you're kidding. It was like the biggest book in probably 10 years, the first one. I was like, oh, here we go. And so...
It was purpose-driven life, wasn't it?
It was not. Oh. But I pulled over for an interview. It was on the road, and the guy didn't show up.
Ugh.
And then the next thing I get 3 weeks later is a phone call from the publisher apologizing that the guy, without telling anybody, went and got another writer. He never even met me. It's like I didn't even get to interview for it. So, Johnny, I'm just saying, it's okay that you didn't get picked.
Some of the things that you... miss out on, you got to think sometimes you're being protected from those things, maybe in a way, you know, like you're not supposed to get every opportunity.
There was one
because maybe there's a guy who got it. It was supposed to, that was his moment. He's supposed to get it. That was his.
I've never thought about it.
What you do is the people who get those things, you've dehumanized them. You're like, I don't know who this loser was.
This guy.
But
no, because
he is my mortal enemy now.
Because the musical guy, he went and got like a legend.
Yeah.
And probably paid a lot more money than they would have paid. But there was one that I missed out on. The publisher cut me out after I had written all the proposals, all the stuff. It went on to be a pretty big book, but they use an in-house writer. And I don't think that process went great between the writer. I think they had to change writers.
Did you take any like Schadenfreude from the thing not going great after they had not chosen?
Well, of course it didn't go great, guys. I wasn't involved.
Were you like, sorry that happened?
I did not. I mean, okay. I tried not to, but
I don't think that that's one. I don't think you're capable of that. I don't think you're capable. I don't think you're capable of guile.
No, I don't think you. But to your point, though, I do know that if that happened, that the process wasn't easy for either one of them.
Yeah.
And so maybe to your point, maybe I wasn't supposed to do that. It wasn't going to be, you know.
Yeah. If they were going to be like on you, because I know you work with collaborators sometimes and they, everybody has a different thing. They know what they don't want, but they don't know what they want. So you just like start throwing stuff and they're like, no, not that. And you go, well, give me some direction. They go, no, just keep writing. I'll let you know when you hit the target.
There's some authors, they can't get it down themselves, right? You take their words and you help get their words down in a way, and you're right. They just know that they could make it better. You know what I'm saying? They don't necessarily know.
I think that's how it'd be if we wrote a book together.
You think so?
Yeah. I think I would be harder on you, and it would affect our friendship.
I think you'd be a perfectionist a little bit, but here's the thing. I help perfectionists find their way to the page. I would just tell you honestly.
You stop short of saying, I deal with some pretty big egos, Johnny. I think I can handle you.
No, what I would have to tell you sometimes is, and you would agree with this,
because
you're an artist and you're mature in this because you've done this a long time.
Yeah.
You have to, and I tell them, at some point, you have to push print.
Yeah, no, you do. And I have a thing where if I can talk myself out of doing something, because I feel like it's going to be a 10-step process, then I will do it. I will talk myself out of it. Meaning, if I have an idea for a funny video and I go, gosh, to do the idea the way I want to do it, it's going to cost $10,000. I won't go think of a $500 way to do it.
Right.
So, like, good and done is better than perfect and never done.
Which brings us to...
And why you need a collaborator.
Right. And then... You don't even know. I've already been doing this with you.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't have a video podcast.
We wouldn't.
Because you don't like what we're doing with
it. So you're saying this has all been a gigantic manipulation of me.
I'm saying I have helped you.
Oh, boy.
Because people really love. I mean, I can't tell you the number of viewers we have.
So many. We do have quite a few listeners now. We have a lot of new listeners.
Yeah.
If you're a new listener to the show and you found us, I know some of our podcast episodes have been linked from some articles and on some online publications, and that's great. We welcome you. Go subscribe to the podcast. We'd love to make you a subscriber. Mm. Then you can go back and get all the old episodes, and you'll get a little notification when a new episode drops.
Yeah.
And there's a 300-plus episodes archived on our website. Talk about that, podcast.com.
Mm. So natural.
Yeah.
Sorry, you know what else is natural, Johnny?
What's that?
You tell me.
John, it's time, speaking of commerce, it's time to listen to a few more of our fine, fine advertisers. Let's keep these lights on one more day.
For some of us, personal finances aren't just personal. They include loved ones, neighbors, the communities we call home, and the causes we hold in our hearts. At Thrivent, planning your finances is bigger than just money. We help you put your plans into motion and faith into action so you can do more for the ones in your heart. Because sometimes all you need to make a difference is someone to help you make it happen. Thrivent, where money means more. Connect with us at Thrivent.com.
I actually had a listener comment to me this week that they find it funny to see what you do now that you've taken over the transition.
It's hard because, the thing about marketing is I try to be so real in my shows, and I have such a side eye towards like people who are trying to like present one thing and then with the other hand sell you something.
Right.
And so I have like a little bit of a side eye in my everyday persona and on stage. And so even my marketing in my shows is very self-aware. I have a tablecloth at my merch table that says Johnny W, huge logo, Johnny W. And then at the bottom it says, has a fancy tablecloth. I have a banner that's a pull-up banner. It's a huge photo of me and it says, please buy something and help me pay for this banner. I don't know how to really like present myself for real because I am afraid of coming off as somebody that's like, oh yeah, he's just selling something. So. Yeah. But listen, you got to have advertisers help people find the show, and we're grateful to our advertisers. And we're very selective, I will say that.
Yeah.
There are advertisers who have come to the show and said, "Hey," and we go, "We're not really in alignment with this brand." So if you hear an ad and you go, "What are they doing?" Like, we want to hear about that because there's every now and again we'll will veto.
Yeah.
We get a lot of, we have fine retailers. We get the Geicos and the Home Depots of the world.
Yeah.
Fine quality.
I think they are, they've been trying to find this for so long.
That's what
How
it is.
Could we partner?
Yeah.
We talk about that and we're like, well, we have a way now.
Yeah.
Because they've been beating down our doors for a long time.
That's what's going on. People go, how do we?
Well, Sean, if your doors get beaten down, try Home Depot. They sell doors.
We don't know if they're a sponsor this time around, but they do sell doors. My buddy got a job selling doors door to door. Did you hear about this?
I didn't know.
I was like, how do you get a job like that? He said, well, there's a screening process. That's stupid. It's
been around a while. I like that.
I know.
One.
That's one of my jokes from the. I apologize.
Little callback.
It is, but come on.
Hey, it's about that time, Johnny.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's my quote of the week. A little segment we call They Talked About That.
Mm.
This week, Johnny.
Yes.
Epicurus.
Is it Epicurus?
Epicurus.
Yeah. I always thought it was Epicurus.
Epicurus is when he was really asking a lot
when
of questions.
When he's like, when he's like, wonder why that? Oh, he's being...
Here comes Epicurus. Epicurus, this is from the 4th century.
Yeah, I started to say, that's a very old... You don't hear a lot of... Like, if somebody names their baby now Epicurus, that's a reach.
Well, 4th century...
That's kind of a retired name.
4th century BC.
Right. You don't see a lot of those.
So, yeah, we're going back.
Yeah.
Way back. Do not spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. Remember that what you now have was once among the things you only hoped for.
Mm. That's good. We've been talking a little bit about that with missed opportunities or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. And I spoke last week on... 2 weeks ago on comparisons.
Yeah.
Because we're doing a series called Undo. We're going to call it Command Z.
Oh, okay. I like that.
But we thought
but that's a very, yeah. It's
yeah.
A very...
So, because it came with our mutual buddy, Scott Gillis.
Is Command Z a thing on PCs as well? Or
there's
is it only
a version.
A Mac?
I don't know what it is. Yeah. But our mutual friend, Scott, he was running media for me. We're back there. I'm always changing things right before I add a final scripture or whatever. And we just need to undo a bunch of stuff. And he was just like, man, we could just Command-Z this whole thing if you want. I was like, hey, there's something there. I'm going to do a whole series on Command-Z. It's great.
Command-Z.
But then the team was like, yeah, we can't use it. It's too niche, as they would say.
I don't understand. Why?
Because everyone doesn't understand what Command-Z
means.
Well,
you'd have three sentences where you explain that it's how you
undo. No, that's what I thought. But you know what we call the series?
Undo.
Undo. Yeah. And then I moved Command-Z into the introduction of it. So I told the story still without branding it out of that. Anyway, and there's an article I wrote about this as well where I talked about your comparison detox. But the whole idea is we kind of enter the new year going, all the things I have to do, all these things I need to do. I need to do this better, do a budget better, do better exercise. And maybe the reason we struggle with that is because there's more things we should probably undo first to make room for those.
Okay.
And so I want to undo, not just for this year, I want to do it daily. This idea, man, of comparison, whether it's to somebody else, whether it's to an idealized version of myself.
Yeah, that's a big one for me.
Yeah.
More than even other people. Like, I can look at somebody else's career and be like, well, yeah, but they've put in work that I wasn't willing to put in yet, or it's their turn. It's fine. I can do that. I can make peace with that. But I feel like I'm not meeting my potential as some super version of myself that I'm imagining.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's been 5 years and I don't have a new this, or I don't have whatever. Yeah. I thought 5 years ago by now I'd be here. You can really torture yourself.
You can. And I think that there's that idea of, I know what that is, right? It says, I know the future, or I know what the future should be.
Yeah.
I think that's a real human thing. I know what the future should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to the echoes, really, of the Garden of Eden. Like, there's this true kind of paradise within us that we expect, but we don't live in paradise anymore. And so when paradise is not paradise, we're disappointed all the time. I think it's important to always stop and wonder, why am I even disappointed? What is it in me that says I should be disappointed by me not accomplishing something? Why did I think I should? And I think that's an echo of that you know, God, that God impression that's inside of us as an inheritance from our created nature from Him that we took on. And I think that, man, you end up taking something that should be good, and you should expect good. I'm not saying we stopped expecting good. I'm saying there's a reason that feelings in there.
Yeah.
But comparing to others to our future self, and it's so true how Epicurus said it. There are things, you and I just went through a whole talk about comedy and book writing and all kinds of stuff. And we're making jokes about all the ways that we came in second or whatever, or we didn't get the thing we wanted. If you would have told the 30-year-ago version of ourselves that we would be in these circles at all.
Right.
I can remember when I first started writing, and God's honest truth, I told you this, I'm pretty certain, when we were young.
Yeah.
My dream was so just like, if I could ever walk into a bookstore, pull anything off the shelf that had any of my writing in print.
Right.
That would be the all-encompassing,
sure.
You know. I mean, that really was. It's how it felt. If you would have told me, well, you know, 32 books later, you're going to be sitting here making jokes about all the ones you didn't get.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to think about what you hope for and how you miss it while you're in it.
That's what you need to change it out for. Instead of being like upset that you don't meet some goal of your imagined, idealized future self, you need to feel bad because you've disappointed the 20 years ago, John. Because he would look at you now and be like, what are you complaining about? What is your... So just change what you feel bad about is what I guess I'm saying.
Oh, I do. Don't worry.
I rotate in.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a whole gamut that I pull from.
I can always find something I should be...
Well, and if you ever run out, just call
me. You've
got
a list.
I do. I got a...
You keep it.
I keep it in a notes app on my phone.
It's dynamic, really. I dictate into it every day.
It's AI generated.
Yeah. But
no, it's true. I don't know. I think... Like you said, if I could just go to a bookstore and pull anything from the shelf and have my writing in it. You're right. I've thought about that with comedy. There's an interview with Jerry Seinfeld, more than one, where he says when he was a kid where he was starting out in comedy, and he just said, I would just look at these guys on TV and I just said, I just want to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
He didn't say, I want to be the best. I want to be a billionaire, which he is. He just said, I want to be one of those guys. Now, there's a drive. There's a determination that comes that everybody doesn't have. And I think that that's a glimpse of, there's a God thing in there, too, of like that drive to keep pushing through failure after failure and just not lose that steam. All of that is a gift. But I just think the idea of when you look at what your original goals were, it's sometimes good to go check in with yourself and be like, okay, I get to go to this. I mean, I go to some small towns. I was just in a small town in Louisiana, and it was a theater, and we didn't sell it out, but they said I sold more tickets, like twice as many tickets as the last six or seven shows they had there. They were thrilled with the turnout. And I thought, you know, a few hundred people left their houses to come see me do stand-up tonight. This is the dream.
Yeah.
This is an absolute dream.
Yeah.
And you still can find something to be like, yeah, but it's not as good as so-and-so that was just here last week and they sold, you know, whatever. You can do it to yourself if you want to, or you can just like stop along the way and be like, check in with yourself and go, this is what we're doing is we're living in our calling. We're living in what we're supposed to do. And that's pretty cool. And I don't know.
Yeah. And if you're listening, you know, we talk about creative processes a lot. I mean, I would say if I was listening as my 20-year-ago self, or whatever.
It'd be pretty weird, first of all.
Well, yeah.
We have the technology,
my
John.
AI has been uploaded to my consciousness uploaded to AI. I think I would be a real, and I still have this with people ahead of me, like a real like, yeah, that's easy for you to say in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
And I will say, to your point, you can, and I don't think you can hear some things just by knowledge. I think they have to come through experience. That's a new thing for me. I used to think I could communicate it well enough if there's, and I now believe there's just some things you cannot learn or cannot grasp fully outside of experiencing them. But there really are no arrivals. Like there's never been a moment, and I'm not that successful of some big author or whatever, right? I know my role is to help other people predominantly get their message out. And it's a humbling role a lot of the time because it's hard and it's not spotlighty. And I really love that part of it. Now I'm old enough to go, I know why I don't want all that spotlight in the same way I used to.
Yeah.
You know,
Do you think you'd be more successful as an author if you didn't use words like spotlighty? Do you think that's held you back at all?
I don't know. I mean, it's... Johnny, I'll try not to dumb it down for you.
I appreciate it.
If you don't mind.
It sounds like a character in a children's book.
Hey,
I'm spotlighty.
Oh,
that's a great voice too.
But spotlighty. But wherever you are, I mean, I think you know, it's okay to be there and just know the people I do work with who are on some major stage, like, they're not walking in some other level of contentment and fulfillment that the rest of us are not. That's right. A myth. That's just not true. Comparing to them is not, it's not true. Yeah.
Oh no, I'm in text threads with successful comedians sometimes, and they'll be like, do you ever just sit and think about the things that you didn't get and just ruminate over it? Like, how do you stop doing that? And I'll be like, you're doing theaters, dude.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, I had a conversation a week ago with a comic, and that was the text. And I just was like, I was flabbergasted by it. Because again, even though I know it, when you see it on the page, you go, oh, we're all, it just adds to the anxiety if you let it. Like, nobody ever arrives. You just go up a level, and then the expectation goes up. And again, I don't want to demonize like hard work and determination, because I think those are important. The pushing through and giving your best. So I'm definitely not saying we should just settle.
No.
Because I don't think that that's where happiness is either, where you just go, look, I'll just learn to be less than, and I'll dim my light for the rest of the world, and that'll be okay. That's not okay either.
Yeah.
But when you give it everything you can, and then you end up at whatever you end up with, you just got to go, this is enough for me, and I'm not going to ruin it by comparing it to some other thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's believing that your specialness is given and not earned.
Yeah.
And if you believe that it's already given, then what you're trying to do is work harder to steward it versus work harder to strive towards it.
Okay.
And I think a life spent stewarding is working harder, maybe. But you could be that guy. That's a real thing for me. Am I striving today, or am I stewarding today? And if I'm striving, then I always feel like I'm not enough. I'm not going to get there. But I feel like, hey, I know God made me to do some unique things. How I'm going to do my best to steward them. And if they don't go today, they're in His hands. Did I do my craft well? I serve well? It's been a real gift to serve people like Reggie Dabbs. Like, what a 25 year friendship that's deepened my life. And we text about a lot of things, and you know, that aren't related to writing.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing I get out of that. God's journey has been less about what I accomplished, because I'm not that accomplished, right? But it's more about who I'm becoming, and He's used people and experiences to deepen or to form me. And that's what discipleship is, right? You're being formed into something as you follow somebody. So, I mean, I think, you know, just put it under that test. Am I stewarding the thing I know God has made me, not just one thing? We're talking in an art form right now. That counts for your life, for your marriage, for your kids, for your personality, for your relationships, for, you know, your church, all the things in your life. Whatever you've been given, it doesn't have to be a talent per se or an ability. Just the life you have is the one God gave you today. It's a heart. I say it to myself all the time. The life I have today is the one God's given me. Like, this is my gift. This is my prize. It has its ups, has its downs. It has its suffering, its beauty, and it has its ugliness. It has all of it. This is it. This is the gift. And how do I steward what that is 24 hours at a time? Right. That's the best I can do. Right. How do I grow in it today? So yeah.
One day at a time. Sweet Jesus.
Just remain Epicurious, guys.
Please.
I'm begging you.
I swear I thought it was Epicurious. I think I've been saying Epicurious my whole life. I mean, I don't say it very often because it's a weird thing to bring him up the dinner table. You know, before I hand you these mashed potatoes, I think Epicurious said,
yeah,
that would be weird. Well, I am weird, though.
Yeah.
John, speaking of weird, I think it's time for my two segments. Let's start with Johnny's old jokes. We call it Joke About That. I've heard this one from several comics. I do not know who to attribute it to, but I think I can tell it without reading it. Basically, an old man's eating breakfast by himself in a diner, right?
Mm.
And he's having the works. He's having the bacon, the eggs, the gravy biscuits. It's that kind of a meal. And this young hipster comes in. He orders his food. Then he looks over. He can't. It bothers him too much. He has to walk over to this guy. He walks over to this old guy. He goes, you know that stuff will kill you, right? And the guy goes, this stuff? He goes, yeah. He goes, my grandpa ate like this every day, and he lived to be 90. And the young guy says, from eating that? And the old guy says, no, from minding his own business. I think that's one of my favorite, like, turn the tables kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a funny, like, pure...
It's very curmudgeon.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what I like most about it.
Crumudgeon, excuse me.
Is it crumudgeon? I think it's curmudgeon.
I think it's crumudgeon. got to be your...
It's
Epicurious curmudgeon.
Epicurmudgeon. I think it's curmudgeon. John, look it up right now.
Okay, we're going to look it up. Here's the thing. I have no shame
John,
either way.
John, you're the author.
What if... Well, if
but
I'm
I am a bit of a wordsmith. Not to toot my own...
I'm having trouble spelling this.
It's C-U-R-M-U-D-G-E-O-N. If I was in the spelling bee right now.
Curmudgeon. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, guys.
A curmudgeon is like somebody that gets is grouchy because there's crumbs on his...
So we're even. Epicurious and curmudgeon. If Epicurious was a curmudgeon?
This is going to make the show title. I can guarantee it somehow if we're going to figure out. John, let's do This Week in History. We call it Talk About Then. This week, John, 1992, U.S. Vice President Dan Quayle states, quote, George Bush will lead us out of this recovery.
That's not a good...
It's amazing how low the bar is now for political commentary that doesn't even, like, move the needle to me anymore now. We just have people just saying the craziest stuff.
Yeah.
Dan Quayle was like, everybody thought he was a buffoon. I don't know, man. This guy's a statesman compared to... what I think we're offered nowadays
if you took
as politicians.
Just a week of things that we hear this week.
Yeah.
And then you went out and said, guess what Dan Quayle said? And you put it in Dan Quayle's.
Right.
We'd probably be like, that guy was an idiot. You'd be like, yeah.
Actually.
That was. Yeah.
That was John, me. This week. It was me. Yeah. John, this week. Born this week, 1901. Had a long life. He died in 1988. But Frank J. Zamboni. Do you want to take a guess of what. He's an American inventor. Let me just say that. Do you want to take a guess on what?
The Zamboni.
He invented soft serve ice cream. No. He invented the Zamboni ice resurfacing machine used in skating and hockey rinks. Now, from what I can tell about a Zamboni, I don't know a lot about hockey, but it looks like it's scraping the top layer of ice on, and repairing the scars and kind of almost like remelting it too. Like there's a heat element to where it like, cause it's like shiny when he goes past it.
Mm-hmm.
I need some more clarity on what's
happening.
I don't know.
I think it just takes off the top layer a little bit.
But it looks all shiny and wet when he goes over and then it rehardens. So I think there's something else happening.
Maybe
I think there's a heat element.
Well, maybe the way they're taking off the top layer is adding a little bit of water so that it sort of melts the top layer, then take it off.
I don't think it's just a scraper.
No, I think there's something happening.
It's like
there.
A sander of some kind.
We could, guys, if you play
maybe
hockey.
Maybe the heat from that sanding is causing a little bit of melt, but it's rehardening right away. Like they have to, I don't know. Anyway, when literally your name is the machine.
Well,
it's like if your name was Bob Xerox.
Yeah. They're probably, I don't know.
Maybe there is, I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, that's a...
Not a sponsor.
You made the Zamboni, and like, there's no other like ice resurfacing machines out there, right? To my knowledge. There's not like a...
I don't know.
He's got it.
He's like the Kleenex of
he
ice
did
resurfacing.
He is.
Machines.
He's the Google of Zambonis. John, born this week, 1853. Andre Michelin. He did more than what you think, though.
Okay.
And this is why he made the list. He was a French tire maker, of course. I didn't realize Michelin was a French, but I guess it makes sense. Andre Michelin, French tire maker. He and his brother founded the Michelin Tire Company in 1888, but he also started publishing the Michelin Guide 12 years later, 1900, to promote tourism by car and thus boost the tire industry. So, as you know, if you go to Five's, you and Laura are quite the foodies.
Michelin stars.
Michelin stars is a big deal for restaurants. That literally is tied to, let's get people on the road so they burn up their tires faster, so we'll sell more tires. It's very savvy.
I never...
Especially for 1900.
Yeah, the reason for it I'd never put together before.
He was like, we've got to get these people driving. These tires are lasting too long. But it's odd to like want a tire company to rank your restaurant highly.
Yeah, it's the highest thing you can get.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's crazy.
Michelin star on your restaurant is like big.
Yeah.
And it makes people drive their cars to your restaurant, hopefully have a blowout on the way.
Here's hoping.
And they, you know.
Wow.
Anyway, that's I like that one.
You know, that's how, wait for it, not Betty Crocker. Okay, name some of the other.
Sarah Lee?
No.
Duncan Hines.
Duncan Hines.
Okay.
That's what Duncan Hines, he was a guy that traveled.
Uh-huh.
He was just a traveling salesman, I think.
Right.
And then he
He would carry cakes in his briefcase to keep himself.
He went to so many restaurants that he began kind of publishing sort of a little like, here's the best restaurant, because he was a traveling salesman.
Okay.
And it became like the Duncan Hines thing was actually
like almost the early Zagat guide to the restaurants.
And so eventually this new cake mix in a box thing was invented, and they needed a brand for it. And they wanted a like celebrity spokesperson.
He's like the early influencer.
Yeah.
So they're like, we need a guy that can put some heat on this.
They named it. They bought him in and named him Duncan Hines. And he, because his name was synonymous with food quality.
Okay.
So Duncan Hines was not like started by a guy named Duncan Hines to make cakes. It was started by a guy who was reviewing restaurants.
Huh.
Kind of on a grassroots
level. It's like an early sponsored post.
Yeah.
He was the early influencer.
Exactly.
That Duncan Hines.
Tell you what.
He's going places. John, finally, this week, 1984, recording TV was ruled legal thanks to our buddy Mr. Rogers.
Huh.
So in what became known as the Betamax case, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that copying television programs for the purposes of time shifting does not constitute copyright infringement, and that manufacturers of home video recording devices cannot be held liable for consumers violating copyright laws. So I guess this was a thing. People were starting to sue. You know, if you tape your episode of ALF or whatever, they can be like, aha, you've now appropriated this content and you can be sued. So the Supreme Court had to get involved. Walt Disney Company and Universal Studios had sued Sony, claiming their Betamax recorder could be used for copyright infringement and they were therefore liable for damages. TV personality Mr. Rogers testified that some television programs willingly allowed time shifting, thus providing a legitimate excuse and use for recorders. Part of the court's decision was made as a need to prove that home recorders had a legitimate legal use. So Mr. Rogers stepped in, and it's the reason why we probably have DVRs and all of it. I mean, that's what it led to. It's just like, I can't be here. I want to record this show and watch it later. But I guess we can't distribute copies of our DVR shows, so that's a different use. Like, I mean, I would tape shows and then, like, I would share those with people. I'd be like, hey, I've got all these. If you missed last night's Dukes of Hazzard,
here you go.
Whatever. I guess it wouldn't have been Dukes of Hazzard. That's before. But if I'm still taping Dukes of Hazzard in my teenage years.
On a VHS.
On a VHS.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. That's interesting, though, that Mr. Rogers, I mean, listen, the guy had a far-extending reach.
He really did.
I thought it was going to say that Mr. Rogers won the day because he was saying this is educational programming and that out, you know, that basically makes it. But he was like, no, it's because of time shifting and all this other thing. And I don't know, I'm not 100% sure all that means, but basically he found a precedent.
Yeah.
He's a smart dude.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. We miss you, Mr. Rogers. We need more Mr. Rogers in this
world. Boy, don't we ever, though.
Man.
People who, I mean, the idea of just civility right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not decrying and shaking fists at the heavens. I mean, there's a lot of really great people.
If you were to shake fists at the heavens, it would suit your current glove wear. You're wearing the fingerless gloves. You look like a street tough that's getting ready to be like...
I wonder if when I walk around, if people think of me as tougher than I am because of the way I dress.
Yeah, dude, you got the shaved head. You got the fingerless gloves.
I told you what I do on volleyball trips.
What?
Like, sometimes we're in... You know, downtown Atlanta, downtown Louisville.
Uh-huh.
I need to walk down to the Walgreens or something and get something. It's late at night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's them mean streets when you're heading to the Walgreens.
And so I walk through some interesting places sometimes. Uh-huh. And I always have a hood and I put it on and I just try to look meaner than everybody else I pass.
You snarl at people?
No, don't look them in the eye.
I see.
What I want them thinking is don't look that guy in the eye. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I know exactly where I'm going.
And then you come out with, like, a bag of Nasonex and some Werther's Originals, and they go,
let's mug that guy.
That guy in the hoodie's not near as tough as we thought.
I put it in a brown paper bag.
He's got a terrible sinus infection. And he likes weird candies.
Yeah, he has horrible posture. Yeah, so there's all kinds of things they probably think.
I'm so sorry.
I just blend, though. They don't see me at all.
My wife loves a creme brulee because it's a gluten-free dessert. She can never have desserts at restaurants, but if they have a creme brulee, it's gluten-free.
Oh.
It's basically just sugar. It's just whipped. So we had a creme brulee, you know, that they glaze the top of it with a torch or whatever, and it's got a crispy. So we're eating this, and I start eating it because I'm just having a... And she looks at me like, this is all I can have, and you're really going to try to share this with me. Thanks. It's a tiny thing anyway.
You just finished off your whole big bowl of ice cream. You're like, what do you got over there?
Yeah, this looks good. Yours is crispy on top. So I'm eating it, And then as I'm eating it, I'm realizing this is basically a melted down Werther's Original. It tasted exactly like a melted butterscotch or a melted down Werther's Original.
If there was someone giving Michelin stars right now,
yeah,
they would be so offended at
exactly,
what
because
said.
I know it's supposed to be, it's a hoity-toity kind of dessert.
It's up there.
It's an upper crust.
Well, where were you having it? Like at McDonald's or something? Like
no, it just, I've had a lot of creme brulees. This one in particular, though, tasted like a melted down Werther. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Listen, I'm 50 now.
I love a Werther's.
I love a good Werther's. I want to give a kid a Werther's and tousle his hair and be like, hey, hey sport.
Sport, yeah. Yeah. You know you're going to say sport. Run off and come back.
Nobody tousles anybody's hair anymore. You know what I'm saying? Nobody says, hey, buddy.
Where did I see
good job out there.
I think I saw this on an Instagram reel, maybe, or a TikTok reel that my wife sent me, but they were talking about the Generation X, and the guy was saying, like, you realize when we were growing up that they had to put Sammy Davis Jr. On television at night to remind you that you have children who aren't home.
Right.
Like, it's 8 o'clock. Do you know where your children are?
That was Sammy Davis Jr.? That
that's
did
what
that?
He said it was, yeah.
Wow.
It's like literally because parents are like, what? Oh, that's right.
All
those
right.
kids.
Yeah.
The day of, like, tussling a kid's head and saying sport. You get tackled right now for doing that.
Well, your hand will get stuck, all the products in this hair. You know what I'm saying? It's a different time.
I wonder if you've laced the Werther's with fentanyl or something. You know, right. You can't just hand out candy anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's more for me. More. Listen, we'll close on this because this is one of those I'm admitting a low moment.
Oh.
We're in BJ's warehouse.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a Costco-ish place, right. A Sam's Club. You're buying in bulk. But every now and again, I walk down that candy aisle, I'm like, I could go for a dum-dum sucker. But instead, you buy a 5-pound bag of dum-dum
suckers. 500 of them.
Now you have, that's in your home. Well, I have a soft spot for the, you know, those cowtail things, those, what are they called? The cream, they got it's a caramel chew, but it's got the cream in the middle.
Yeah.
Gosh, John, those are a problem. They're probably 50 calories each.
Yeah.
You open one, it's gone. It's gone. And then you go, that's 50. That's, keep them going.
It's not actually gone. It's inside of you now messing with your bloodstream and your metabolism and your lifespan.
So I was like, I want some of these because I never see them. Here's my, to my defense. They don't have them in gas stations anymore where you can just buy like
a
little.
I see them at gas stations all the time. Well,
maybe we're going to different gas stations, John. I'm trying to defend my decision here to buy a 5-pound bag of those cream, you know, caramel cream chews. And then you go, well, yeah, but I mean, this will last me. And then you walk by that bowl, John, every day. You have a couple of those things.
Right.
And that bowl starts getting low, and you're like, it's only been a week. Have I eaten 5 pounds of caramel in a week? What's wrong with me?
Jeez.
And that wasn't this week. It's been a while.
No, it was last week.
But it happens with desserts a lot because, like, okay, here's another example. Thanksgiving comes. One time we were home for Thanksgiving. We didn't get to go home, so we stayed here. And now we're going to the grocery store like a bunch of losers the day before Thanksgiving. It's, you know, the shelves are almost empty. And then I want to get a pumpkin pie. Well, a pumpkin pie is useless to Curry. She's gluten-free. So it's literally, she goes, are you really going to eat an entire pumpkin pie? Because they didn't have, like, the individual slices you can get. I go, no, I'm not going to eat this pumpkin pie right now. I go, over the next couple of days, I will slowly. But the truth is, I was going to eat it.
You're going to eat a whole pie.
I was deciding to eat a pie. You can't just buy a pie and be like, oh, all I wanted was.
Because you're not going to throw it away. What are you, a monster?
It's in the house, taunting you, saying, hey, I look like a Pac-Man now.
Sometimes we throw out like a pie that we didn't finish, and that feels like an accomplishment. Because it got too old. You know what I'm saying? You're like, okay, I made it.
This is some...
It usually wasn't because I ate out too much or whatever. And I just wasn't home for it. But
wasted pie.
It is. Boys.
Won't that preach?
I tell you though, some of y'all have been wasting your pie. And
listen.
What you need to do.
You need to undo. I wish I could undo my decision to buy a 5-pound bag of caramels, but you can't. That's something you can't undo.
No. No, that's happened. That's with you now.
I just need to know for the next time, hey.
Right.
Keep
next
walking.
Next time you go to BJ's.
Yeah. Keep walking.
It's like I always tell, sometimes the waitress will be like, hey, I'll have like this tiny little bite of food left. She's like, hey, do you need a doggy bag? I was like, ma'am, I am my own doggy bag.
Yeah.
I'm taking it all home with me.
Yeah.
Just in a different way.
Yes.
Sometimes they look at me really weird, but it's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you consuming this episode today, dear listener and viewer. How could they find other episodes, John?
You know, there's like 330 plus episodes at talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Click on the upper right hand link. That's how you support the show. Get ad free content. If you want to send us a note, click on the lower right hand link or email to hello@talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
And when you type in, say it like that.
Say it as you type
out loud.
We hear that.
We hear it. Yeah.
We know if you've done it or not.
It's AI. It comes right through.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's how the ones that don't have that, we don't get them.
Uh-uh.
They go straight to a spam blocker that we've set up.
That's right.
But anyway, thanks for everything. The podcast is really starting to grow, and we appreciate, especially our new listeners. We love the people that have stayed with us. We're never going to abandon you.
No.
But we love the new people. You're attractive. I don't know what it is. We
love all of our kids the same.
You smell terrific out there. We're sorry.
Guys, thanks for the time you gave us today. Let's do it again next week, guys.
Talk about that.
For some of us, personal finances aren't just personal. They include loved ones, neighbors, the communities we call home, and the causes we hold in our hearts. At Thrivent, planning your finances is bigger than just money. We help you put your plans into motion and faith into action so you can do more for the ones in your heart. Because sometimes all you need to make a difference is someone to help you make it happen. Thrivent, where money means more. Connect with us at Thrivent.com.